Hi there, Craig Wilkinson from Dangerous But Good Podcast. And man, we're living in interesting times. The US elections have just happened and there's frothies all around. Some rejoicing, some sobbing, some recriminations, just lots and lots of questions being asked. And one of the key questions that a lot of people are asking is why have young men in America kind of abandoned the Democratic Party, and why are so many of them voting for Donald Trump? And I saw this very fascinating clip, which we'll watch a bit of now. Stephen Bartlett from The Diary of the CEO interviewing Professor Scott Galloway, and just some fascinating interactions. So let's listen.
I would argue that young men are not going to the Republican Party. People have this image of young men that their knuckles are dragging along the ground. They actually are almost as in favor of gender rights as young women. What I would argue is that they're leaving the Democratic Party.
Already some fascinating points are raised there. The trend is apparently in the USA that young men are getting more conservative and young women getting more liberal. And what the professor is saying is that the perception that young men are getting a lot more conservative is not that accurate. That young men in general, and this is very much my experience in South Africa working with young men, that young men are almost as concerned about and committed to gender equality as are young women. We're growing up in a society where humanity comes first, where we realize the importance of people, and we realize the importance of equality. And I think the message that if we have an egalitarian society, a society where everyone has the same opportunities, the message that that is actually a good thing for everybody, everybody benefits, has permeated society. And young men are growing up with that belief. And there's a very strong sense of allyship amongst young men, amongst the men I work with in corporations, that if we provide equal opportunities for men and women, and if we have women in leadership and women in key decision-making processes, it's good for everybody. So this whole concept of men being knuckle-dragging troglodytes that are stuck in the past that want to dominate is not actually the truth. Men want women to have equal rights. Obviously, there are exceptions. Obviously, misogyny is still in existence. Obviously, sexism still plays itself out. But it has shifted and changing. And I think particularly amongst Gen Z and younger men, that perception has changed. And that's a very important point that he makes there. Let's listen to some more.
If you go to the DNC, the Democratic Party's website, there's a section that says who we serve. And it lists 16 demographic groups ranging from Asians and Pacific Islanders, the disabled, seniors, Black Americans, veterans. And I think it adds up to 76% of the U.S. population. You're discriminating against the 24%. And that 24% are squarely one group. It's young men.
This is absolutely fascinating. It's so pivotal to the world today and very much South Africa. So what the professor is saying is that if you go to the Democratic website, it lists 16 demographic groups that it serves, that it supports and backs. And it lists a whole different range of different groups, including women, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But none of those demographic groups includes young males, young white males. And so we get to the point of a very profound point, which is inclusivity doesn't mean exclusivity. Inclusiveness doesn't mean exclusiveness. You cannot purport to serve 76% of the population and totally exclude another 23 or 24%. Now, we're seeing that very much in South Africa today. We're seeing that young boys, and I deal a lot with young men and men in corporations, employed, wealthy, in poverty, unemployed, a wide range of men. And I'm seeing this play out, that men are feeling neglected, left out, disenfranchised, just put to the side, demonized in many ways. And in South Africa, we've taken it a step further. We've even said that men are trash. The term toxic masculinity comes up all the time. So it's very important in today's world where we are looking at redressing any past imbalances, where we're looking at addressing any social injustices, that we make sure that we're focusing on every single population group, that everyone feels included. Now, obviously, affirmative action is a good thing because we need that to redress past imbalances. But if that happens at the total exclusion, and that's happening in the USA with young men, it's happening with men and women around the world, where if men feel totally neglected, excluded, left out, and in fact, even more than that, demonized, told that they are the problem, it becomes a challenge. There is going to be a rebellion against that. And what the professor is saying is that young men are leaving the Democratic Party in droves because the Democratic Party doesn't care about them. It's plainly said, we don't serve you. We serve everyone else, but we do not serve you. And they're saying, well, you know, what about me? Yes, I want equality. Yes, I want to support those who have previously been disadvantaged. But I'm also here. I'm also a human being. Also, you know, this particularly affects young men growing up, because a young boy, a young man coming into adolescence, coming into young adulthood, he's asking, he's bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, he's asking the question, what is my place in the world? What is my place under the sun? What is my identity, my validity? What role can I play? And if the world is saying to him, actually, you don't have a role. Actually, it's not your turn. Actually, your ancestors had a turn, but you don't. You don't mean much now. Of course, they're going to rebel. They're going to be confused. They're going to be often devastated. They're going to pitch up in a whole bunch of negative ways, self-destructive and destructive to others. And so this is such a crucially important point. Another very important point that comes out of this is that the moral high ground can never be inherited. Just as the moral high ground can never be inherited, so can guilt never be inherited. Each generation has to scale the heights of the moral high ground themselves by their own attitude, their own behaviors, what they do. The ANC made this massive mistake. The ANC in its early form, in its early infancy, was a very noble organization. It was led by noble men and women who had a fantastic and very values-driven mission. And great men and great women formed it, founded it, and it did an incredible job. The next generation and the generation after that felt that they could ride on the coattails of the previous generation's righteousness. And they began to lose the plot because they can't do that. Every single generation of the ANC, of men, of women, of cultures, has to, that generation, earn the right to scale the moral high ground. Now, what's happened to young men is they are now being demonized for the flaws of their forefathers. They've been demonized for the patriarchy. And they say, well, you're part of the problem. A young boy of 13, I mean, how can he be part of the problem? He's just coming into the world. And yet the world is saying to him, you are part of the problem. You're the patriarchy. You're the enemy. And this is devastating, and this needs to be addressed and changed. And, you know, this is one of the big mistakes made by the Democratic Party in this election, and we can see the results of that. Let's hear some more.
Families and young men feel this. We don't have an opioid or a homeless crisis in the United States. We have a male opioid and a male homeless crisis. 3 out of 4 opioid addicts, 3 out of 4 homeless people are men. 3 times as likely to kill themselves, 12 times as likely to be incarcerated.
Some more important points, you know, statistically, and this is the USA, but it applies across the world. The prof is saying that they don't have an opiate problem, they have a male opiate problem, that 3 out of 4 opiate addicts are male. They don't have a homeless issue, they have a male homeless issue, that 3 out of 4, 75% of homeless are men, are males. So clearly the system is not helping young men. And the more young men and men are disenfranchised, the more they're likely to backlash and cause destructive behavior. We need to bring everybody along. We need to have a society in which everyone has equal opportunities, everyone's equally valued, and everyone is brought along on this journey. If men are struggling to this degree, it's going to be problematic. It's going to be devastating for our future. And families are feeling this. You know, mothers of sons who are struggling are feeling this. I work a lot with single moms who are absolute heroes in our nation. I mean, the things that they've done to hold our nation together, the things that they've done to raise up boys and girls to be healthy adults is just mind-blowingly honorable. And yet so many of those single moms, in conversation with them, they talk about how fearful they are and how scared they are for the future of their young boys, because they see their young boys struggling. They see them suffering because there's a lack of affirmation given to them, a lack of leadership given to them, a lack of positive, healthy, older male role models modeling what it means to be a man to them, and a lack of society just valuing those young men as equally as they value young women. And so this is a major problem that we need to deal with. Let's listen some more.
Women under the age of 30 are now making more money than men. More single women own homes than single men. And by the way, we should never do anything to get in the way of that. That's a remarkable victory for us. But a lot of young men and their families feel that these young men are really struggling and they are not seen by the Democratic Party.
So many great points coming out here. You know, paraphrasing and just extending on what he's saying is that as a society, we've come such a long way in terms of reaching towards equality, reaching towards non-racialism, non-sexism, non-misogyny. We've still got a way to go. Absolutely, we do. But we are further down that line than we ever have been. And yet the noise around those issues is louder than it's ever been. So one commentator put it beautifully. He says, you know, for many years, we've been looking for equal rights for gay people, for women, for black, white, et cetera, all these different groupings. And we're approaching the station of equality. We haven't quite got there yet. And just as we're about to get there, we accelerate and we bash through the boundaries of this particular station, which is where we were aiming at. And now we're in this whole new territory of identity politics and blaming and histrionics and just caustic, toxic behavior, putting people in boxes, identity politics, one blaming the other blaming the other, and just losing our sense of humanity and not acknowledging how far we've become. In America, the stats he was giving there is that young woman, woman under 30 now own more houses than young men under 30. They're earning more money than young men under 30. And so we've come a long way. And this is good. It's excellent. The fact that we've empowered women and women have come this far is brilliant and excellent. And it shows how much we've done. We need to continue until we really have a truly equal society. And there's a way to go. But boy, have we come a long way. And we need to acknowledge that. And we need to continue building on that. But without creating a situation where a certain group of the population excluded and demonized. More to come.
The Democratic Party, I would argue that our big failure over the last 20 years is that we've become sort of these self-appointed cops of social justice and have tried to lecture the nation on what is the right social policy or behaviors. And then America has pretty squarely rejected this. The University of Michigan has invested $150 million in DEI, social policy, and the number of complaints about racism is up 30-fold. The sentiment, feeling about America has all gone down. The Democrats have decided we're about social policy as opposed to the economic policies that are actually going to impact you. And a large part of America has sort of rejected it.
To build on the previous point, you know, he raises the fact that a particular university in the United States has spent over $180 million on DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. And they've come a long way in terms of the representation of different minority groups in the student body. And yet the incidences or the complaints about racist behavior, sexist behavior are up 300%. So we're doing something wrong. We're doing something wrong. Often when you beat the drum of social justice too loudly, it actually creates more social injustice problems because you're creating an awareness of something they wasn't aware. You know, our young kids going to school, you know, young kid, and there's a beautiful song, you know, when a child is born into the world, it has no concept of the color of skin that it's born into, you know, none whatsoever. You know, these arbitrary distinctions we make between black and white are just absolutely arbitrary physical attributes as opposed to anything of real value. And yet we as adults seeking social justice indoctrinate our kids now into being so aware of race that they become more racialist than they would have been because they weren't actually racist. They were just having a buddy and having a friend. And now because we're creating such an awareness, the same with sexism. We're creating such an awareness around male and female and past injustices that we're creating a confusion in young kids growing up. And instead of them naturally following the inclination to humanity, to love, to friendship, which knows no boundaries of race and gender, they become acutely aware of it and they start finding things that are not actually there. So we need to be very careful about how we deal with social justice issues. Yes, they're real. Sexism is real. Racism is real. Past injustices are very real. They need to be dealt with. But we need to be careful how we deal with it because we could create a massive problem by beating the drum too loudly and having the wrong kind of interventions.
The group that has ascended the fastest globally is women. Twice as many women in the last 30 years elected to some form of parliament. More women globally now are seeking tertiary education than men. And so you have a cohort of not only young men, but families that are upset and angry. They're not doing well. And they feel seen by the Republican Party and Trump that it's gone so far to the progressive that it's no longer promoting the rights of non-whites. 60 years ago, 12 black people at Princeton, Harvard and Yale, that's a problem. Two-thirds of Harvard's freshman class now identifies as non-white. And somehow, as a non-white male that's not making as much money, that's more inclined to be an addict or gambling, owns fewer homes, somehow I'm still the enemy. So there's I think, justifiable anger and a feeling that the Democratic Party has really moved away from young men.
Wow, what a fascinating discussion and so insightful and so relevant to us here in South Africa and to the entire world. You know, we are all human beings. We are all human beings of equal value. We are all human beings worthy of equal rights, equal opportunities. Gay, straight, black, white, religious, non-religious, whatever your nationality, whatever your gender. And that's the kind of world we need to build. Everybody needs to be seen. Everybody has a yearning to be understood, to be known, to be affirmed, to be given an opportunity to shine. And that's the kind of world we need to live in. That's the kind of world we need to build. And in promoting inclusivity, we need to be sure, make sure that by promoting inclusivity, we're not actually promoting exclusivity. Because all we're doing then is just repeating the history of the past. We need a new world in which everybody is equally valued, equally seen, and equally given a space under the sun, a place at the table and a voice at the table. And I'm excited that we're going to build this world. We're going to build this world together. And that's why we talk about being dangerous but good. We need to be dangerous to every single thing that threatens the kind of world we're trying to build. Dangerous to prejudice, dangerous to corruption, dangerous to sexism, racism, any of these things. We need to be dangerous to whatever it is that threatens humanity, our right and our ability to be humans who love each other, support each other, see each other, get each other, and work together to build a great future. That's what Dangerous But Good is all about. Craig Wilkinson signing off. We'll see you next time.